We're doing the book of Shmuel. We're up to what's called the ninth chapter. We had learned about our brave warrior Shaul, who was willing to stand up to Goliath. And we had learned that Shaul, even though he's described as a young man, it certainly seems like he was older, because in one place the Navi describes that King Saul, Shaul, was only king for 2 years. So if he was only king for 2 years, and when he passes away, he has a son who's already 40 years old, it certainly seems like he wasn't so young. You know, he had to be over 40 if he has a son who's 40. We discussed the story of how Shaul met his wife. You remember when they danced, she went and grabbed him. He didn't grab her. You guys remember all this? Can we move forward? So Shaul is a head taller than everyone else, and his father has lost some donkeys. Now, in the Benjamin region, we have a lot of desolation, because after the Civil War, there was almost no one left in the tribe of Benjamin. And so Saul is searching for his father's donkeys. He takes one of the lads with him, and he starts traveling. And here we encounter again the mountainous regions of Ephraim. They keep coming up. Remember, they came up in the book of Judges with the story of Micha, with the story of Pelegesh Begiva, then with the story of Shmuel's father, Elkanah. And now we encounter it a fourth time with Shaul, who is going through the mountainous regions of Ephraim, and he cannot find the donkeys. And he says to the lad, "We got to get home, because Dad is going to stop worrying for the donkeys and start worrying for us," right? That's the key word. So in the Tosefta, it says that this is the prelude to Saul becoming king. That modesty that he says to the lad, "Dad is going to start worrying about us," that he treats the lad as an equal. Now, that was the modesty that in heaven they paid attention to, it was decided he should be the next king. So the lad says, "There's a man of God in this city, and whatever he says comes true. Why don't we go ask him where the donkeys are?" This line gives us tremendous insight. That's why when Moshe Rabbeinu is speaking to his father-in-law Jethro, and Yisro asks him, "What are you doing here all day? All the people are waiting online to talk to you." So Moshe describes, "They come to ask me, ki yelahim davar ba'elai. When they have an issue, they come to me." Then he says, "They have questions about God's laws, they ask me." So the commentaries ask, what did he begin with and say, "When they have an issue, they come to me"? And our sages say, from this story we learn that people would come to the prophet not only for godly things. They would also come to the prophet when they had material issues, like Saul, who can't find his donkeys. "Hey, prophet, can you help me?" So the pasuk gives us a tremendous insight as to the relationship that people had with the prophet. This also gives us a certain perspective. We sometimes think that the leaders of Israel are so distant. I remember about a decade ago that a rabbi asked me if I could come with him to see Rav Eliashiv. So Rav Eliashiv was one of the great halachic authorities. He passed away a short time ago. So I asked him, "You're going to see Rav Eliashiv?" He said, "Yeah, I'm going to ask him an intricate question. And whenever I go to Rav Eliashiv, I try to bring another pair of ears with me, someone else who will listen, and this way, when I leave, I could ask him, I could confer with him, and make sure I remember every detail correctly. And the guy who usually goes with me is not available tonight. Can you come with me?" So I said, "Sure." What's the question? Then I asked him, how did you get in? What does that mean, you get to go to Rav Eliashiv? How does a person get in? You have contacts? So he said to me, "What do you think this is? The prime minister's office? You need contacts? This is the leader of the Jewish people. What's he living for? For the Jewish people. You want to ask him a question, you call up his office and you say, 'I'd like to meet with Rav Eliashiv,' and they'll tell you in a month or 2 months when's his next available slot, and you could go meet him. Every Jew could go meet him. That's why he's the rabbi of Israel, so that Israel can come and ask him questions. He's not a prime minister. He's here for you." So that was an eye-opener to me. That I could go and talk to Rav Eliashiv if I have a question. But if you think about it, that's what you see here. Saul is concerned for donkeys, so he's going to go and ask the prophet. You'd think, what are you wasting his time for? No, he's the man of Israel. That's his job. His job is to be there for the people. We find that Aaron was on the level of Moshe Rabbeinu, yet he was intimately involved with people's marital issues. When people had problems with their wives, Aaron would help them make the peace. Where do you have time for that? You're the Kohen Gadol. And yet our sages say he did. It says there were thousands of little children named Aaron, because he was the one who brought peace in the home. And out of appreciation, they would name the child Aaron. They'd say, we only had another child because of him. We're still married. So they'd name the child Aaron. So there were a lot of kids named Aaron when he passed away. So back to our story. So Saul says to the lad, but if we're going, we got to bring something. It's not nice to show up empty-handed. It's another nice idea. So the lad says, yeah, I got a quarter of a shekel. We'll give that to him. So they're going. And they approach the city. And there are a bunch of girls coming out to draw water at the well. So the girls look up and they see this very handsome young man, taller than any fellow they've ever seen before. So they ask the girls, is the seer around? So they ask them, yes, he's here. He's just before you. You have to rush because he's just come to the city today. And there's going to be a sacrifice today for the nation. When you come to the city, you're going to find him. Notice they're going to talk a lot now. They're going to say many sentences, and the reason is because they're enthralled by his beauty, so they want to chat with him. So they talk on and on and on. No one's going to start eating until he comes, because he has to bless over the sacrifice. And today's going to go, but you guys have to go, and if you go that way, you'll find him. Many superfluous words, our sages say, yeah, they were interested in chatting with him. So our sages say another thing. I don't know if it's... Don't take it, don't apply it today, but the sages say, we find in Tanakh a recurring theme. You come to a city, girls are going out of the city, so then things are going to work out well for you. You see that Saul comes to the city, the girls are leaving the city, and things work out well. Eliezer comes to the city, the girls are leaving the city to draw water, things work out well for him. He finds a wife for Yitzchak. Moshe comes to the city, the girls are going out to draw water, things work out right for him. He finds a wife. So our sages say it's a good omen when the girls are coming out of the city as you approach. So I don't know how we would apply that today. Where's the city? Who are the girls? Where do you draw water? So that's why I don't. Okay, back to our back to the prophet. So they come, and Shmuel is approaching them, and Hashem has told him that a young man is coming who's going to be appointed king. So Shmuel sees Shaul, and God tells him that's the person. And Shaul walks over to Shmuel. He doesn't know that he is the prophet. And he asks him, can you show me, please, where is the house of the seer? And Shmuel says, I am the seer. And in heaven, the greater a person is, the more they're careful with him about every word he says. And that's the idea that our sages say, that when a person is great, so then they go a hair's width with him. And in heaven, God, so to speak, said, really? Well, let's see. And that's why the next time Shmuel has to appoint a king, so Jesse, Yishai, is going to bring his sons before Shmuel, and Shmuel is going to be super impressed with the eldest. And he's going to say, wow, here's God's chosen one. And Hashem tells him, nope, I don't like him. Don't be so impressed by his height, his arrogance, I hate him. And then the next one walks in, and again Shmuel is impressed, and God says, don't be so impressed. So why is Shmuel making a fool of himself? Every time he's impressed and he says words of appreciation, and Hashem says no. So Hashem was showing Shmuel, you used the sentence you shouldn't have said, I am the seer. And you're not the seer. I am the seer. I'm allowing you to see. So even though Shmuel was very modest and humble and he was a tremendous tzaddik, where the Navi in Psalms, it equates Shmuel with Moshe and Aaron. So he had tremendous weight. Even so, there was something here that was slightly off, and he was taken to task over it. Yes?
So the situation where Shmuel, ends up getting the five brothers, and one of them chose a brother, Hashem said no, chose the next one, Hashem. I'm thinking, how did that play out in real life?
When we get there, we'll discuss it.
Because that's the, like, thinking like real life circumstances, thinking how that would happen.
Stay tuned. We'll get there, Bezat Shem, in a few weeks. Shmuel says, come, you guys are eating with me, and in the morning I'll send you off, and I'll tell you whatever you want to know. And don't worry about the donkeys, because they've already been found. But you should know that what everyone's talking about and wondering, you and your family is going to receive it. So Shaul understands the hint, and he's not sure about the hint. So Shaul says, I'm from the smallest tribe. Right? His tribe has just been almost annihilated. They were down to 600 families, right? 600 men, no families. And my family is the youngest of the families in Benjamin. So why are you telling me that? And Shmuel doesn't answer. He takes Shaul with him, and he gives them a seat at the head table, and he tells the chef, you know, I told you to prepare a special portion, bring it to him. And so they bring him, now just so you should imagine, they bring him a shok. A shok is a size of meat that's larger than this table. Shok is a thigh. So that's a piece of meat that's bigger than me. You know, the animal's thigh, you're talking about the size of my arms, you know. A huge piece of meat they're putting before Shaul. I guess he gave some out. What's he supposed to do? You know, animals, even a moderate animal has a huge amount of meat in its thigh. Okay, so Shaul and Shmuel eat. And as they're ready to leave, Shaul is invited up to the rooftop. And there Shmuel speaks to him. Shmuel starts telling him where things are headed. They go for a walk, and Shmuel tells him, tell the lad to go ahead. And now you stick around, and let me tell you. He takes a flask of oil, which is a bad sign, and he's going to anoint Shaul. And when Shaul is anointed, so Shaul is anointed with an oil that's not the most chosen oil. There are two types of oil. There's Shemen HaMishcha, and there's Shemen HaFalsimon. There's an oil which there's oil that they would carry in a horn, and there's oil that they'd carry in a flask. This was oil in a flask, and it was a bad omen. It was a sign that Shaul's kingdom would not last. When a person was anointed with a horn, so a horn has two openings. You have to close both openings, but a horn represents continuum. A flask is a closed vessel, and so too Saul's kingdom would be closed. It would not have a continuum. So Shaul is from the tribe of Benjamin, and Shaul is given the potential to be Mashiach. When Shaul is anointed, Shaul is in fact being charged with the responsibility of being Mashiach ben Yosef. He is the first king from the descendants of Rachel, and we have a tradition that the way world history is supposed to play itself out is there's supposed to be a leader from the descendants of Rachel who will lead us to fantastic wars against Amalek, and in the process of so doing, he will die, and then there will be another king from the descendants of Leah, what we call Mashiach ben David, or David himself, and he will finish off the job, bringing us to the fulfillment of the prophecies of building a temple and bringing the world back to where it should be, where death ceases to plague us, and we bring a world to what we call Yemot HaMashiach. And so when Shaul is anointed, Shaul is in many places. I just quoted many midrashim.
No, I mean, as in, is it chronologically speaking, does it say that the son in the house of Rachel will give birth to the first potential Mashiach, but then this will be cancelled and passed over to Leah?
Okay.
Does it say in the Torah?
It's a Medrash Rabbah on Parshas Vayetze. It's a Medrash Tanchuma on Parshas Vayetze. It's a Psik to the Rav Kahana. It's a Pasuk in Tehillim. It's a Medrash Shocher Tov. It's you want more sources? It's a Pasuk in Zechariah. A lot of it is commentaries. I'm saying if you want actual texts, so it's things that our sages based on tradition explain the text. It's not that there's one text that spells it out, no.
Nothing prophesized it beforehand. Like, you know how the Torah says that the tribe of Judah will lead the Jewish people, and today we're all from the tribe of... And that's an incredible reality, that's an incredible prophecy, which we can see is chronologically based. Can we apply the same to this?
It's complicated. I wouldn't... That's a different question. I'm saying... The question is how you understand the verse Ad Ki Avo Shiloh. Let's leave it for tradition. I wouldn't say that there are psukim that you have to understand that way. There are psukim that our sages interpreted that way, And if you're working with our sages' interpretation, you understand it. I think we have to discern between the two questions. Your question seems to be a question of, if I didn't believe the tradition, would I believe based on the verses? And to that, I would say no. That's what I would say. If your question is, now that I've learned and I understand the written Torah and the oral Torah, what's the source for what I said? That's a different question. Right. But I sense that's not your question. So I would say this is relegated. And by yeah, I'm saying so then I would say that everything I just said is relegated to oral tradition. I do not see a way that it can be proven from the text. There are places in the text that that's how we interpret them. But you could argue and interpret them differently. Yeah.
You said at the beginning that he had the potential to be Mashiach.
Right.
But you also said that due to the oil that was used, he would have a closed kingdom.
Right, but we just said Mashiach ben Yosef, the Mashiach was a descendant of Rachel, is supposed to end. Mm-hmm. Meaning the prophetic vision was that there would be a start from the children of Rachel, or an end from the children of Rachel, but it would not be a dynasty. We also have to remember that every prophecy has multiple potentials for interpretation. If God says in 40 days Nineveh will be overturned, so it's up to the people of Nineveh whether it will be physically or spiritually. They chose to do it spiritually, so it didn't have to happen physically. Over here, it's not that Shaul was forced to sin. Right now, the cards are stacked in a certain direction. If Shaul would have played it out right, it didn't have to play itself out this way. As we will see, his son-in-law, which in many places in Torah, a son-in-law is called a son. So his son-in-law is the continuum. It didn't have to play itself out this way. When it's decreed that Shaul would lose the kingdom, so he got the greatest gift in that he's losing it to his son-in-law. If you have to lose the kingdom to someone of another tribe, it doesn't get better than this. I'm saying if you want to view it that way, and his own son is willing to be vice president under David, and David is best friends with Yonatan, potentially it could have played itself out differently. Shaul chooses to pursue David. Shaul chooses to refuse to accept the decree from above. But had he made peace with it, which is obviously easier for me to say, right? I feel bad speaking this way about Shaul because Shaul was a tremendous tzaddik, you know, who am I? But at the end of the day, we do see that it could have played itself out differently. It's Shaul's own grandchildren that could have been the continuation of Shaul's dynasty. It could have played itself out that way. So even if it would be his grandson through his daughter, but you know what? David's dynasty ended up going through girls also. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi was a descendant through daughters, not only through sons. Yes?
Why is it that they're not using the same oil that Moshe had on the Mishnah, especially since it's the oil that's used to another
family? Right. So they had a tradition that only kings from the house of David, only kings from the descendants of Judea would be anointed with the Shemen HaMishra. This was a tradition they had. Yeah.
David was at the tribe of Judea.
Correct. Yes. Yes. I didn't hear you.
There's a continuation for Shaul through Mordechai and Esther.
Agreed. Agreed. Very good. Yeah.
So wait, if he was anointed with the sleeve, what do you call it? The
flask.
The flask. So if he, are we saying that he was anointed with the flask, therefore he couldn't have had the Mashiach, or are we saying that he was anointed with the flask, but he could have flipped it over?
No, he could have still been Mashiach, but he would have been Mashiach ben Yosef. He wasn't prepared to be Mashiach ben David. Mashiach ben Yosef is supposed to die. Mashiach ben Yosef has an end. It's not a dynasty. So his anointment with the flask does not contradict that. It's part of the heavenly plan which he could have fulfilled. So Shmuel gives him a bunch of signs. He says, you will go to Kever Rachel, which is on the border of Benjamin territory. And you will encounter two people there. They will tell you that the donkeys have been found and that your father stopped worrying about the donkeys, he started worrying about you. And then you will go to a place called Elon Tavor. You'll meet three people who are on their way to the temple. And one will be carrying three goats, one will be carrying three loaves of bread, one will be carrying a flask of wine. They will greet you with peace and give you two loaves of bread. Accept it from them. Then you will continue going to the Giv'at Elokim, where the Philistines have their representatives by the Aron. And when you come to the city, you'll see a group of prophets approaching you. They will be with music, because prophets always have to be in a good mood. You cannot get prophecy without being in a good spirit. So you will feel the spirit of Hashem descend upon you, and you will have prophecy with them. You'll become a different person. This lends itself to the concept we once learned in the Drashot Aran, that spirituality can have a spillover effect. Sometimes a person isn't necessarily worthy for a certain level of spirituality, but he stands next to someone else who is. And then when the other person receives their prophecy or their spirituality, it can spill over, even though the person is not worthy. So Shaul will receive prophecy now, but only when he's next to them. So when all these signs come, you should know that you're ready to lead. And then you can go and lead to war, but I'm telling you now that you have to wait for me to come and bring a sacrifice. And I'm warning you. I'm giving you fair warning. I have to be there and bring the sacrifice before you go to war against the Philistines. So all the signs come true, and he gets his prophecy, and there's a line they say, Hagam Shaul Banavim, is Saul also a prophet? That became a saying till today. People say that when they see someone unique in a certain behavior, they say about him, Hagam Shaul Banavim. And he comes home, and his uncle asks him, where'd you guys go? So they tell him, we were looking for the donkeys. He says, where'd you get to? They say, we got to Shmuel, the prophet. And his uncle asks him, what did Shmuel tell you? So he says, oh, he told us where the donkeys were. And he doesn't say a word about the kingdom. Shaul is silent. Shmuel gathers the people and everyone comes. And he tells them, Hashem is very upset with you. That after everything he's done for you, you want to distance yourself from him. That's why you're asking for a king. He knows what you're up to. And so we'll do what you asked for. Well, he draws lot, comes out to the tribe of Benjamin. They draw between the tribe of Benjamin, comes out the family of Matri, and then Shaul is chosen. So they say, okay, can Shaul step forward? So they look, and Shaul's not there. Everyone's looking, and where's Shaul? So Shmuel says, so they ask Hashem, what are we supposed to do? Where is he around? And this is where we'll pick up, Be'ezrat Hashem, next week. Okay. We'll do a little bit of Sefer Amidot, and then we'll go on to Pirkei Avot with the Jewish home. What? Sefer Amidot is by the Magid Miduvna.
Oh.